Chapter 17. Artemis.
You there?
Parzival.
Yes! Hey! I can't believe you finally responded to one of my chat requests.
Artemis. Only to ask you to cut it out. It's a bad idea for us to start chatting.
Parzival. Why? I thought we were friends.
Artemis.
You seem like a great guy, but we're competitors, rival gunters, sworn enemies. You know the drill.
Parzival. We don't have to talk about anything related to the hunt.
Artemis. Everything is related to the hunt.
Parzival.
Come on, at least give it a shot.
Let's start over.
Hi, Artemis. How have you been?
Artemis.
Fine. Thanks for asking. You?
Parzival.
Outstanding. Listen, why are we using this ancient text-only chat interface? I can host a virtual chat room for us.
Artemis. I prefer this.
Parzival. Why?
Artemis.
As you may recall, I tend to ramble in real time. When I have to type out everything I want to say, I come off as less of a flibbertigibbet.
Parzival.
I don't think you're a flibbertigibbet. You're enchanting.
Artemis. Did you just use the word enchanting?
Parzival. What I typed is right there in front of you, isn't it?
Artemis. That's very sweet, but you're full of crap.
Parzival. I am totally and completely serious.
Artemis.
So, how's life at the top of the scoreboard, hotshot? Sick of being famous yet?
Parzival. I don't feel famous.
Artemis. Are you kidding? The whole world is dying to find out who you really are. You're a rock star, man.
Parzival.
You're just as famous as I am. And if I'm such a rock star, how come the media always portrays me as some unwashed geek who never goes outside?
Artemis. I take it you saw that SNL skit they did about us?
Parzival.
Yes.
Why does everyone assume I'm an antisocial nut job?
Artemis. You're not antisocial?
Parzival. No.
Maybe.
Okay, yes. But I have excellent personal hygiene.
Artemis. At least they got your gender correct. Everyone thinks I'm a man in real life.
Parzival. That's because most gunters are male and they can't accept the idea that a woman has beaten and or outsmarted them.
Artemis. I know. Neanderthals.
Parzival. So, you're telling me definitively that you are a female, IRL?
Artemis. You should have already figured that out on your own, Clouseau.
Parzival.
I did.
I have.
Artemis.
Have you?
Parzival.
Yes. After analyzing the available data, I have concluded that you must be a female.
Artemis.
Why must I?
Parzival.
Because I don't want to find out that I've got a crush on some 300-pound dude named Chuck who lives in his mother's basement in suburban Detroit.
Artemis. You've got a crush on me?
Parzival. You should have already figured that out on your own, Clouseau.
Artemis.
What if I were a 300-pound gal named Charlene who lives in her mom's basement in suburban Detroit?
Would you still have a crush on me then?
Parzival.
I don't know.
Do you live in your mother's basement?
Artemis.
No.
Parzival.
Yeah, then I probably still would.
Artemis.
So, I'm supposed to believe you're one of those mythical guys who only cares about a woman's personality and not about the package it comes in?
Parzival.
Why is it that you assume I'm a man?
Artemis.
Please. It's obvious. I get nothing but boy vibes coming from you.
Parzival. Boy vibes? What, do I use masculine sentence structure or something?
Artemis. Don't change the subject. You were saying you have a crush on me?
Parzival, I've had a crush on you since before we even met. From reading your blog and watching your POV, I've been cyberstalking you for years.
Artemis, but you still don't really know anything about me or my real personality.
Parzival,
this is the Oasis. We exist as nothing but raw personality in here.
Artemis,
I beg to differ. Everything about our online personas is filtered through our avatars, which allows us to control how we look and sound to others. The Oasis lets you be whoever you want to be. That's why everyone is addicted to it.
Parzival. So, IRL, you're nothing like the person I met that night in the tomb?
Artemis, that was just one side of me, the side I chose to show you.
Parzival, well, I liked that side, and if you showed me your other sides, I'm sure I'd like those too.
Artemis, you say that now, but I know how these things work. Sooner or later, you'll demand to see a picture of the real me.
Parzival, I'm not the sort who makes demands. Besides, I'm definitely not going to show you a photo of me.
Artemis, why? Are you butt ugly?
Parzival, you're such a hypocrite.
Artemis,
so?
Answer the question, Claire. Are you ugly?
Parzival, I must be.
Artemis, why?
Parzival, the female of the species has always found me repellent.
Artemis, I don't find you repellent.
Parzival, of course not. That's because you're an obese man named Chuck who likes to chat up ugly young boys online.
Artemis, so you're a young man?
Parzival, relatively young.
Artemis, relative to what?
Parzival, to a 53-year-old guy like you, Chuck. Does your mom let you live in that basement rent-free or what?
Artemis, is that really what you're picturing?
Parzival, if it were, I wouldn't be chatting with you right now.
Artemis, so what do you imagine I look like then?
Parzival, like your avatar, I suppose. Except, you know, without the armor, guns, or glowing sword.
Artemis, you're kidding, right?
That's the first rule of online romances, pal. No one ever looks anything like their avatar.
Parzival, are we going to have an online romance? Crosses fingers.
Artemis, no way, Ace. Sorry.
Parzival, why not?
Artemis, no time for love, Dr. Jones. My cyber porn addiction eats up most of my free time.
And searching for the Jade Key takes up the rest. That's what I should be doing right now, in fact.
Parzival, yeah, so should I. But talking to you is more fun.
Artemis, how about you?
Parzival, how about me what?
Artemis, do you have time for an online romance?
Parzival, I've got time for you.
Artemis, you're too much.
Parzival, I'm not even laying it on thick yet.
Artemis, do you have a job or are you still in high school?
Parzival, high school. I graduate next week.
Artemis, you shouldn't reveal stuff like that. I could be a Sixer spy trying to profile you.
Parzival, the Sixers already profiled me, remember? They blew up my house.
Well, it was a trailer.
But they blew it up.
Artemis, I know. I'm still freaked out about that. I can only imagine how you feel.
Parzival, revenge is a dish best served cold.
Artemis, bon appetit.
What do you do when you're not hunting?
Parzival, I refuse to answer any more questions until you start reciprocating.
Artemis, fine. Quid pro quo, Dr. Lecter. We'll take turns asking questions. Go ahead.
Parzival, do you work or go to school?
Artemis, college.
Parzival, studying what?
Artemis, it's my turn. What do you do when you're not hunting?
Parzival, nothing. Hunting is all I do. I'm hunting right now, in fact. Multitasking all over the goddamn place.
Artemis, same here.
Parzival, really? I'll keep an eye on the scoreboard then, just in case.
Artemis, you do that, Ace.
Parzival, what are you studying in college?
Artemis, poetry and creative writing.
Parzival, that makes sense. You're a fantastic writer.
Artemis, thanks for the compliment. How old are you?
Parzival, just turned 18 last month. You?
Artemis, don't you think we're getting a little too personal now?
Parzival, not even remotely.
Artemis, 19.
Parzival, ah, an older woman. Hot.
Artemis, that is, if I am a woman.
Parzival, are you a woman?
Artemis, it's not your turn.
Parzival, fine.
Artemis, how old do you know H?
Parzival, he's been my best friend for 5 years. Now, spill it.
Are you a woman?
And by that, I mean, are you a human female who has never had a sex change operation?
Artemis, that's pretty specific.
Parzival, answer the question, Claire.
Artemis, I am, and always have been, a human female.
Have you ever met H, IRL?
Parzival, no.
Do you have any siblings?
Artemis, no. You?
Parzival, nope.
You got parents? Artemis. They died. The flu. So I was raised by my grandparents. You got parentage? Parzival. No, mine are dead too. Artemis. It kind of sucks, doesn't it, not having your parents around? Parzival. Yeah, but a lot of people are worse off than me. Artemis. I tell myself that all the time. So, are you and H working as a duo? Parzival. Oh, here we go. Artemis. Well, are you? Parzival. No. He asked me the same thing about you and me, you know, because you cleared the first gate a few hours after I did. Artemis. Which reminds me, why did you give me that tip about changing sides on the joust game? Parzival. I felt like helping you. Artemis. Well, you shouldn't make that mistake again, because I'm the one who's going to win. You do realize that, right? Parzival. Yeah, yeah. We'll see. Artemis. You're not holding up your end of our Q&A, goof. You're like 5 questions behind. Parzival. Fine. What color is your hair, IRL? Artemis. Brunette. Parzival. Eyes? Artemis. Blue. Parzival. Just like your avatar, eh? Do you have the same face and body, too? Artemis. As far as you know. Parzival. Okay. What's your favorite movie of all time? Artemis. It changes. Right now? Probably Highlander. Parzival. You've got great taste, lady. Artemis. I know. I have a thing for evil, bald, bad guys. The Kurgan is too sexy. Parzival. I'm going to shave my head right now and start wearing leather. Artemis. Send photos. Listen, I gotta go in a few minutes, Romeo. You can ask me one last question, then I need to get some sleep. Parzival. When can we chat again? Artemis. After one of us finds the egg. Parzival. That could take years. Artemis. So be it. Parzival. Can I at least keep emailing you? Artemis. Not a good idea. Parzival. You can't stop me from emailing you. Artemis. Actually, I can. I can block you on my contact list. Parzival. You wouldn't do that, though. Would you? Artemis. Not if you don't force me to. Parzival. Harsh. Unnecessarily harsh. Artemis. Good night, Parzival. Parzival. Farewell, Artemis. Sweet dreams. Chat log ends. 2:27:2045. 02:51:38 OST. I started emailing her. At first, I showed restraint and only wrote her once a week. To my surprise, she never failed to respond. Usually, it was with just a single sentence saying she was too busy to reply. But her replies eventually got longer, and we began to correspond. A few times a week, at first. Then, as our emails grew longer and more personal, we started writing each other at least once a day, sometimes more. Whenever an email from her arrived in my inbox, I dropped everything to read it. Before long, we were meeting in private chat room sessions at least once a day. We played vintage board games, watched movies, and listened to music. We talked for hours, long, rambling conversations about everything under the sun. Spending time with her was intoxicating. We seemed to have everything in common. We shared the same interests. We were driven by the same goal. She got all of my jokes. She made me laugh. She made me think. She changed the way I saw the world. I'd never had such a powerful, immediate connection with another human being before, not even with H. I no longer cared that we were supposed to be rivals, and she didn't seem to either. We began to share details about our research. We told each other what movies we were currently watching and what books we were reading. We even began to exchange theories and to discuss our interpretations of specific passages in the almanac. I couldn't make myself be cautious around her. A little voice in my head kept trying to tell me that every word she said could be disinformation and that she might just be playing me for a fool, but I didn't believe it. I trusted her, even though I had every reason not to. I graduated from high school in early June. I didn't attend the graduation ceremony. I'd stopped attending classes altogether when I fled the stacks. As far as I knew, the Sixers thought I was dead, and I didn't want to tip them off by showing up for my last few weeks of school. Missing finals week wasn't a big deal, since I already had more than enough credits to receive my diploma. The school emailed a copy of it to me. They snail-mailed the actual diploma to my address in the stacks, which no longer existed, so I don't know what became of it. When I finished school, I'd intended to devote all of my time to the hunt, but all I really wanted to do was spend time with Artemis. When I wasn't hanging out with my new online pseudo-girlfriend, I devoted the rest of my time to leveling up my avatar. Gunters called this making the climb to 99, because 99th level was the maximum power level an avatar could attain. Artemis and H had both recently done it, and I felt compelled to catch up. It actually didn't take me very long. I now had nothing but free time, and I had the money and the means to fully explore the oasis. So I began to complete every quest I could find, sometimes jumping 5 or 6 levels in one day. I became a split-class warrior mage. As my stats continued to increase, I honed my avatar's combat and spellcasting abilities while collecting a wide array of powerful weapons, magic items, and vehicles. Artemis and I even teamed up for a few quests. We visited the planet Goondocks and finished the entire Goonies quest in just one day. Artie played through it as Martha Plimpton's character, Steph, while I played as Mikey, Sean Astin's character. It was entirely too much fun. I didn't spend all of my time goofing off. I tried to keep my head in the game. Really, I did. At least once a day I would pull up the quatrain and try once again to decipher its meaning. The captain conceals the jade key in a dwelling long neglected. But you can only blow the whistle once the trophies are all collected. For a while I thought that the whistle in the third line might be a reference to a late 60s Japanese TV show called The Space Giants, which had been dubbed in English and rebroadcast in the United States in the 70s and 80s. The Space Giants, called Maguma Taishi in Japan, featured a family of transforming robots who lived in a volcano and battled an evil alien villain named Rodak. Halliday referred to this show several times in Anorak's Almanac, citing it as one of his childhood favorites. One of the show's main characters was a boy named Miko, who would blow a special whistle to summon the robots to his aid. I watched all 52 ultra-cheesy episodes of The Space Giants back-to-back while wolfing down corn chips and taking notes. But when the viewing marathon was over, I still wasn't any closer to understanding the quatrain's meaning. I'd hit another dead end. I decided that Halliday must be referring to some other whistle. Then, one Saturday morning, I finally made a small breakthrough. I was watching a collection of vintage 80s cereal commercials when I paused to wonder why cereal manufacturers no longer included toy prizes inside every box. It was a tragedy, in my opinion, another sign that civilization was going straight down the tubes. I was still pondering this when an old Cap'n Crunch commercial came on, and that was when I made a connection between the first and third lines of the quatrain. The captain conceals the jade key, but you can only blow the whistle. Halliday was alluding to a famous 70s hacker named John Draper, better known by the alias Captain Crunch. Draper was one of the first phone freaks, and he was famous for discovering that the toy plastic whistles found as prizes in boxes of Cap'n Crunch cereal could be used to make free long-distance phone calls, because they emitted a 2600 hertz tone that tricked the old analog phone system into giving you free access to the line. The captain conceals the jade key. That had to be it. The captain was Cap'n Crunch, and the whistle was the famous toy plastic whistle of phone freak lore. Maybe the jade key was disguised as one of those toy plastic whistles, and it was hidden in a box of Cap'n Crunch cereal. But where was that cereal box hidden? In a dwelling long neglected. I still didn't know what long-neglected dwelling that line referred to or where to look for it. I visited every neglected dwelling I could think of, recreations of the Addams Family house, the abandoned shack in the Evil Dead trilogy, Tyler Durden's flophouse in Fight Club, and the Lars homestead on Tatooine. No luck finding the jade key inside any of them. Dead end after dead end. But you can only blow the whistle once the trophies are all collected. I still hadn't deciphered the meaning of that last line either. What trophies did I have to collect? Or was that some kind of half-assed metaphor? There had to be a simple connection I wasn't making, a sly reference that I still wasn't clever or knowledgeable enough to catch. Since then, I'd failed to make any more progress. Every time I revisited the quatrain, my ongoing infatuation with Artemis would undermine my ability to focus, and before long, I would close my Grail diary and call her up to see if she wanted to hang out. She almost always did. I convinced myself that it was all right to slack off a bit, because no one else seemed to be making any progress in their search for the jade key. The scoreboard remained unchanged. Everyone else seemed to be just as stumped as I was. As the weeks continued to pass, Artemis and I spent more and more time together. Even when our avatars were doing other things, we were sending emails and instant messages to each other. A river of words flowed between us. I wanted more than anything to meet her in the real world, face to face. But I didn't tell her this. I was certain she had strong feelings for me, but she also kept me at a distance. No matter how much I revealed about myself to her, and I wound up revealing just about everything, including my real name, she always adamantly refused to reveal any details about her own life. All I knew was that she was 19 and that she lived somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. That was all she would tell me. The image of her that formed in my mind was the most obvious one. I pictured her as a physical manifestation of her avatar. I imagined her with the same face, eyes, hair, and body. Even though she told me repeatedly that in reality she looked almost nothing like her avatar and that she wasn't nearly as attractive in person. When I began to spend most of my time with Artemis, H and I began to grow apart. Instead of hanging out several times a week, we chatted a few times a month. H knew I was falling for Artemis, but he never gave me too much grief about it, even when I would bail on him at the last minute to hang out with her instead. He would just shrug, tell me to be careful, and say, "I sure hope you know what you're doing, Z." I didn't, of course. My whole relationship with Artemis was in defiance of all common sense. But I couldn't help falling for her. Somehow, without my realizing it, my obsession with finding Halliday's Easter egg was gradually being supplanted by my obsession with Artemis. Eventually, she and I began to go out on dates, taking day trips to exotic oasis locales and exclusive night spots. At first, Artemis protested. She thought I should keep a low profile, because as soon as my avatar was spotted in public, the Sixers would know that their attempt to kill me had failed, and I'd be back on their hit list. But I told her I no longer cared. I was already hiding from the Sixers in the real world, and I refused to continue hiding from them in the Oasis, too. Besides, I had a 99th level avatar now. I felt nigh invincible. Maybe I was just trying to impress Artemis by acting fearless. If so, I think it worked. We still disguised our avatars before we went out, because we knew there would be tabloid headlines galore if Parzival and Artemis started showing up in public together on a regular basis. But there was one exception. One night, she took me to see the Rocky Horror Picture Show in a huge, stadium-sized movie theater on the planet Transsexual,
where they held the most highly attended and longest-running weekly screening of the movie in the Oasis. Thousands of avatars came to every show, to sit in the stands and revel in the audience participation. Normally, only long-standing members of the Rocky Horror Fan Club were permitted to get up on stage and help act out the film in front of the giant movie screen, and only after they'd passed a grueling audition process. But Artemis used her fame to pull a few strings, and she and I were both allowed to join the cast for that night's show. The whole planet was in a no PvP zone, so I wasn't worried about getting ambushed by the Sixers. But I did have a serious case of stage fright when the show began. Artemis played a note-perfect Columbia, and I had the honor of playing her undead love interest, Eddie. I altered my avatar's appearance so that I looked exactly like Meatloaf did in the role, but my performance and lip-syncing still kind of sucked. Luckily, the audience cut me a lot of slack because I was the famous Gunter Parzival, and I was clearly having a blast. That night was easily the most fun I'd ever had in my life up to that point. I told Artemis so afterward, and that was when she leaned over and kissed me for the first time. I couldn't feel it, of course, but it still set my heart racing. I'd heard all the cliched warnings about the perils of falling for someone you only knew online, but I ignored them. I decided that whoever Artemis really was, I was in love with her. I could feel it, deep in the soft, chewy caramel center of my being. And then, one night, like a complete idiot, I told her how I felt.